much-loved national broadcaster Gareth O'Callaghan has announced in the past 24 hours that he has Parkinson's disease. He joins me by phone. Gareth, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Nice talking to you again. It's been a while. How are you bearing up?
I'm going through that phase. I don't know how long it'll last for where. I'm kind of waking some nights thinking that was a bad dream, and then I'm kind of thinking to myself that maybe somebody's going to come back and say, actually, that was a misdiagnosis. This is it's just, I suppose, I'm in a quandary of disbelief, and I'm kind of devastated, but I kind of realize that life goes on and I have to move with it, and you know, it's so important that I keep doing everything that I do. But confusion, and I think a certain amount, I think initially of anger, and you know, feeling very, very low about the whole thing, but slowly getting there.
Anger because you feel, why me? Do you feel cheated by it?
Yeah. I mean, it'd be wrong for me to say that that's not the case, and I think I know it's something that everybody goes through. I suppose you kind of think to yourself, I mean, I'll be 57 now at the end of next week, and you kind of think to yourself that I've got this far, and yeah, there have been one or two little scares here and there, but you know, then you end up being told this, and that this is going to change your life, and that you have to do this and you have to do that, and you have to educate yourself, and you kind of have to go back and take on this whole new world and incorporate it into your life while not letting it destroy you and not letting it command you. You've got to keep reminding yourself that this doesn't define you, that this is something that you can carry along with you, but you can still remain very active, incredibly active. You can keep doing what you're doing, but you got to make changes.
Because it's a very slow disease, isn't it? Isn't that the case?
It is. The thing is, no two cases are different, because I suppose no two people are the same. No two cases, shall I say, are the same. Like, everybody has this in a unique way. So, you know, when I hear someone say to me, oh, my father has Parkinson's, or, you know, my mother has had it for years. See, every individual case of Parkinson's is different because, first of all, they don't really understand much about it. It's a very, very sort of, it's a kind of a covert thing. They know that it's a deficiency of dopamine in your brain. The little guys up there who make the chemicals that keep you moving and keep you balanced and keep you cognitively strong, they're dying. And you've got to try and get the dopamine back in there to slow this thing down. But unfortunately, nothing slows it down. It's incurable. It doesn't go away. You try to tame it, and you try to tame it with exercise, as much exercise as you can take on. You've got to be careful of your diet. You've got to take medication for it, which is a bit of a challenge at the moment, because you've got to take it at key times, and if you're 5 minutes out either side, the nausea can be horrendous. But slowly trying to figure out how to sort of work this thing. So it's very strange.
Had you been feeling unwell? How was it picked up?
Yeah, I've been feeling very unwell, and I think I put it down to a lot of stress. I put it down to financial issues, and I put it down to just general life's anxieties, as I say. And I think it's something that I tended to kind of remind myself, this is something most people are feeling at the moment. And I felt there was something wrong inside me. I for the last few months, I felt very unwell. And I took 2 weeks off in January because I just thought I need a rest. I need to kind of figure this out. And Paula, my beautiful partner, gorgeous Cork woman, I stayed with her in Cork for the 2 weeks, and I didn't feel any better. But I think the relaxation of just being away from a lot of the stuff that was causing me stress helped me to relax. And this is one of the things about Parkinson's, is that stress to Parkinson's is like setting fire to a bale of dried hay. It eats you, and it can cause horrendous reactions. It can cause ferocious tremors, and your speech can be affected. The spasms at nighttime, the pains in your arms, your legs, which I still have a lot of the time. But I think I had to kind of get it out there, Neil, because it was becoming noticeable. I was tripping. I was dropping things, you know, particularly in work. When you drop a cup of coffee just literally out of your hand and it scalds your foot, people look at you and think, what's wrong with him? Mm-hmm. And when you trip, I mean, I fell out of the bath one morning and I didn't understand why I fell out of the bath other than my left leg and foot gave way. Mm-hmm. And I've also noticed changes in, like, you've got to try to, sometimes you have to stop and choose words. And it's not that your speech changes. It's just that the way you transport the words, it happens in a different way. So I've found myself writing things down an awful lot more over the last year. Now, you know, when I was diagnosed, I was told that I've had this for a couple of years, which in a way was a relief to me, because there were times over the last couple of years when I thought I'm going mad. I couldn't figure out what this was. And I was reading up an awful lot on a lot of the different types of illnesses and that. And oddly enough, Parkinson's was the one I didn't actually read very much about.
What were you looking at? MS, Alzheimer's, dementia,
yeah,
things like that?
Oh, the lot. The lot. ALS, motor neuron disease, multiple sclerosis. And despite the fact that Parkinson's is the second most common neurodegenerative disease after dementia, I knew very little about it. It was just one of those illnesses that I never really gave much thought to. So I think when I was diagnosed with it, I was absolutely devastated until I read up on it. And I'm a very positive, optimistic person. And I looked at it in different ways, and I went to different sources, and I avoided the websites and the threads where people were falling apart. And I went looking for the more positive side of people who are out there making the best of their lives, and it hasn't changed them because they're keeping on top of it and they're keeping ahead of it and they're mastering it and controlling it. But I think I'm only at that stage now where I'm beginning to kind of gather around me these sources of strength and that, because I think, to be perfectly honest with you, I'm still in a state of shock. I'm still devastated by the whole thing. And I think I try not to look too far ahead. I try not to look at the horror stories. So that's really where I am at the moment. But I think it was important that I got it out there, because if I didn't, it lives in you. It becomes your own ghost, as it were. You become a kind of an internalized prisoner of this thing, and it just wreaks havoc.
Yeah, you're incredibly talented at articulating it. But then again, that doesn't surprise me. You always have been a very strong articulator of issues in your past and very open and honest about it. Do you worry that this may, you know, awaken the sleeping giant of depression again?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm worried about all that lies ahead. I think on the grand scale of things, I think you look as far into the future as you possibly can, and you accept the ultimate, we all die. And then you work back and you say, well, I've either got a long way to go to there, or I'm going to give up. Now, if you give up, you invite in everything. You invite in depression. You invite in anxiety. And it literally chews you apart like a shark. So I think what you've got to do is you've got to fall back on the things you've learned about in the past in relation to depression. And I think you've got to put on that metal jacket and you've got to say to yourself, right, I don't know what this is and I don't know what it's doing to me inside, but it's not going to get near what is me, the soul of the person, if you like. Mm. I mean, it seems to be having a good go at chewing away at the physical part of me. But I think once you keep that light inside burning brightly, I think once you remain as optimistic as you can, and that's not easy. It's very easy at nighttime to fall apart under the psychological and the physical weight of this thing. I never for a moment thought that I would end up being handed this. I think 10,000 people in Ireland have Parkinson's, which probably to many people isn't an awful lot. Ironically, I think a lot of people probably are in the first stages of it and don't even realize they have it. We put the shakes and the tremors sometimes down to getting that little bit older. The body is beginning to wear a little bit more. You know, the those twitches in your shoulders and occasionally the tremors in your feet and that twitches in your toes. Paula noticed there some time back that my hands were just like permanently moving. And I'd seen this happen before a long time ago, on and off, but I never really gave it any thought. I just thought it's probably from lifting that heavy bag I had there for the last half hour. But I think it was the, certainly it was the sensation occasionally of gagging, where you feel like you're going to choke when you're eating. Also, you've got to, you know, you're slipping off a curb occasionally, and you're kind of thinking, what the hell? You know, what happened there? My foot just sort of, it dropped, as it were. Like, you feel these dropping sensations where the strength in your hand is gone for a split second. And it's usually when you're holding, say, a heavy frying pan or a cup of something. And, you know, I thought recently that, you know, that before I was diagnosed, I couldn't figure out why maneuvering a fork was becoming so awkward. I just thought, and I remember saying this to Paula, that the whole idea of getting a fork into a mushroom, now they could turn it into an Olympic sport, you know.
No way. The simple things we take for granted, yeah.
Yeah, the mushroom just kept flying around the place and I had to go after it with the fork. But then, you know, the following morning you'd have no problem taking up five mushrooms. So, you know, these were little strange conundrums that I never gave much thought to until they all began to come together. And then it was when I went back to reading about Linda Ronstadt, as I had done a couple of years back. Linda, in her memoir, spoke about it, and I looked up a couple of videos on YouTube. And then the English DJ David Jensen, many people might remember him from BBC and Radio Luxembourg, that back in the black and white days.
70s, yeah.
But David, I read an article in the Daily Mail by David Jensen, and that was when it really came down hard on me. That was when the lights went on. And I could have taken his name out and just put my name in, and everything he described was me. And that was when I thought, Jesus, I better get this checked out.
Yeah. You're 50. You're 57 now, as you say, and mm-hmm. even with this, it is very slow, and it affects, as you said, the nerve cells in the brain, which then has difficulty sending messages to the muscles, and over time they all debilitate. But it's fair to say, and you said, we will all die. This is incurable, but we will all pass, right? All acknowledge that. You just happen to have been told now, you know, what may well end your life. But and that's a burden you have to carry. Others don't have that because they never know and they just die.
And I'm sure, you know, Parkinson's didn't just happen 15 years ago, 20 years ago with modern science. It's been there for centuries.
Yeah.
But I think people just slowly fell apart. And, you know, people just thought, you know, he's not well. He's getting weaker and weaker, and we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And eventually they just died of pneumonia, or they fell. They had a very bad fall, and that, as it were, precipitated their death. But I think you're right. I mean, realistically, with Parkinson's, of all the neurodegenerative diseases, it is probably one of the only ones that doesn't kill you. The problem is you've got to be more careful. You've got to be more astute. You've got to keep your conscious mind constantly aware of what you're doing as this thing progresses. Now, as I say, you can stave off the progression, the rapid progression, by exercising. They say resistance training, which is weightlifting 3 times a week, is probably one of the greatest forms of exercise to keep, is obviously to keep your muscles strong, but also to keep your brain active and your cognitive facilities and faculties very, very sharp. And also that there are now special diets that you can look into that most people who would be doing resistance training are taking anyway. So really what you've got to do is you've got to get back into that whole area of mind-body health. And that's probably the only way the only way that you can actually, I wouldn't say slow down this thing, but to take control of it and take charge of it and to slow down the changes that eventually it will begin to make.
Mm. And just finally, and I appreciate your time, does the radio show mean more than ever to you now?
Yeah, it does actually. Yeah, it really does. I think music, Dr. Ciara Kelly sent me a lovely tweet there last night, and she just said music is medicine. Particularly for Parkinson's. And I've always found music to be great medicine, even back in the periods where I was depressed. I found music was what got me going and kept me moving steadily again. And I think the radio show for me is more than just a few hours of music. It has become a way of life for me, because I think when I started out doing this in the 1980s, I was very young. My listeners were equally very young. And I think over the last 30 years, we have all grown together, but we still hold on to this love of the music that I was playing back in the 80s. And I suppose it's a throwback retrospectively to the power of music and how it can take you back to more pleasant times. It can make you feel good about things. It can help you to cope with stress. It can help you to cope with anxiety. And I think definitely the radio show for me is more than just a job. It always was. I literally fell into it when I was 17 years of age, and I've never fallen out. So I do think the radio show and the writing are both extremely therapeutic.
Well, I believe that there's still many years on air left for you and, for the rest of us as we clock up, a decade after
decade.
I'm
glad you said that.
I think with or without any illnesses, we're perhaps lucky to be still on the air. and we're thankful for that, says you.
Absolutely.
Long may it continue. There's great support for you online, but you know all about that. You've seen all about that.
Can I just say I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to everybody who replied and for the beautiful comments and even the private messages I received both on Facebook and Twitter last night. It took me a lot of time to actually sort of decide that I was going to write this, that I was going to write it down and I was going to share it with so many people. But I particularly want to thank Paula Delaney, the love of my life. And I she has been incredible ever since I met her, but particularly in recent months since this thing began to really kind of worry me, and I just want to say thank you to her and also to some great friends and my daughters and that and the likes of yourself. Okay. So thank you.
Okay, well, listen, devastated as you are, you said yourself, life goes on. I wish you well, Gareth. I really do. I wish you all the best
thank
of luck
you.
In the world, and we'll stay
much.
In touch, all right? God bless.
Thanks a lot.
Gareth O'Callaghan on 4FM in the afternoon.